Blog Talk Radio.
What if you were wearing something sexy? What if you were drinking? What if you made the first move? No matter what, sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, reminding you, it's never your fault.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and thank you so much for tuning in. I just got off the phone with singer Michael Mayo. We were just discussing his album, Bones. I'm going to give away some copies, so you want to follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keyes. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keyes. Now, I'm going to be speaking with Namina Forna about her book, The Gilded Ones, New York Times best-selling author. I think this is her on the line now. Namina, is this you?
Morning.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Hi. Hi. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my God. I could not put this book down. Like, I was like, Joy, go to sleep. You got to do other things. So remember, you got to interview with Michael Mayo also. I know, but like, but this is so good. I'm at the, and she's about to do, oh, I knew it. Like, that's how I was like reading the book. I was like, I know what's that. Yep. That's what I thought. So anyway.
Oh my gosh.
Look, I read a lot of books, and trust me, not every book I read do I always say, like, I can't put it down. Like, they're a good book, but to not want to put it down and, like, make myself go to sleep type of thing, this is good. Let me say that you are from Sierra Leone, West Africa, but you came to the U.S., and you went to Spelman. Let me ask, Spelman influenced this book greatly? If you didn't go to Spelman, would you have written the same book?
Not exactly as it is, because I think that basically, well, no. I think the answer is no. Because when I was at Spelman, I always had all these questions about, like, why girls were treated a certain way and why boys weren't. And, like, I always kept asking why. But in Spelman, I took women's studies classes, and that was sort of what gave me sort of the base of knowledge to be able to write this book. And the other thing is that, you know, Spelman is a school for girls and for women, young women. So is another facet that shows up in the book, where my main character, Deka, goes to a school for young women, but instead of being taught excellence, they're taught how to kill people, or kill monsters,
Why don't you tell the audience just a little synopsis of the book? Because I'm talking about how much I love it, and I didn't want to give too much away. So if you give a synopsis, I don't know what we can really dig into.
Awesome. All right. So I always tell people that this book is basically like Isadora Melage from Black Panther. We're stuck in the world of The Handmaid's Tale, super patriarchal, and they said burn everything to the ground. The book follows a young girl. Her name is Deka. She lives in this extremely patriarchal world where there's a group of women who are considered demons because they're stronger and faster and they bleed gold. And when, like, real demons sort of enter this world, the humans are, like, to these girls, fight these demons or die. And so Deka decides to do that and goes on an adventure that changes not only her life, but the life of sort of everyone around her. And that's the book.
Yeah. That definitely changes everything. You know, it's crazy. There's a lot of movies, films, books now coming out written by women battling the patriarchy. And in real life, we are battling the patriarchy in this country at a ridiculous level.
Oh,
that
yeah.
You thought, we're not past that? Are you guys seriously going backwards? What is the reason? Is it because people feel they're losing their power, but now they're trying to put the foot back on the neck of women? What is your thought on why we, in certain states, really are really trying to go backwards?
Well, I think, well, the first thing I will say is denial. Like, America even sort of refuses to use the word femicide, which is something that happens here a lot. Like, Americans, like, in America, there's this idea that, we've already gone through women's rights. We've already gone through this stuff. Everything is okay. Ignoring the fact that there is a lot of aggression against women in the United States. There's a lot of, you know, women have sort of like, you know, they've gone too big for their breeches. They're, they are going to school like at higher rates. They have the better jobs. They have the this, they have, and that's what people think. And there's like a resentment to that. And what we're seeing is that backlash. And I think that the other thing that we're seeing is like a complacency, because people aren't, because a lot of people aren't questioning. They're like, oh, we have those rights. Everything is good. The rights are backpedaling. And I think the final thing is religion, because America is very much even like informed by quote unquote Christian values. And so what we are seeing is a result of the idea that a Christian woman should be a certain way. So I think it's like all of these things sort of like bundled together that are allowing this sort of peeling back of rights that people thought they'd won.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if the world knows, but one in every six American women have been victims of attempted rape. Unfortunately, and I'm not a male hater, the aggressors are men. And
yeah,
we have these campaigns, and that's one of the reasons I played the sexual assault PSA, but we have these campaigns trying to teach women how to protect themselves, you know, what to do, where to go, what to carry in your pocketbook, you know.
Yeah.
But where are the campaigns? And there are some, campaigns teaching young men at an early age how to respect the other sex.
And I think it's even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's even more than that, because like, so The Gilded Ones is a feminist book, but it is, and when people think feminist, they immediately think man-hating. And the thing is, the book is not hating towards men, because I understand that the other side of what is happening, I mean, I don't think it's just, you know, teach men to respect women. I think the other side of what is happening is that we live in a patriarchal country. And so for women, the idea is that you are submissive, you're this and you're that. But what happens with young boys is that they are basically stripped of their emotions. Little boys are told,
you can't cry,
pink is not for you, this, da, da, da. And when you strip someone and you refuse them their emotions, of course, they grow up like becoming colder and harder, because that's what the society sort of predisposes them to be. And I think that
that's why we have
a lot of problems.
Men are awarded for certain behaviors, the machismo,
exactly,
the number of women that you slept with, you know, the muscles that you build. And even in that, sometimes it's funny, guys go bodybuilding and they only build the top part and then they have these skinny legs. It's like, come on, you got to do the whole thing. So, no, it's not just respecting women. No, it is. It's a systemic issue, just like racism. It's a systemic issue that is not just going to be solved by one thing. You know, there's laws that are involved, all types of things that are involved. And I think in your book, you're trying to make it digestible for young women, you know what I mean, by putting it in this fantasy place. But now in this fantasy place, I still feel that, you know, it's very African-oriented. You're from Sierra Leone. Is that what's in the book, your Temne tribe traditions? Or did you use other traditions? Where did you get the, like, background for the book?
So with The Gilded Ones, I actually did a lot of research to see, what pre-colonial African civilizations looked like. So I not mm-hmm. only used, for the language basis, I used my own tribal language, Timini, for the basis of like all the different words. But for all the different spaces, I used things that I came across in my research because like growing up in Sierra Leone, like my dad was basically an amateur historian. And so I understood that there were all these massive civilizations and kingdoms that were amazing. But then when I came here, it was like, oh no, like, you know, y'all were certain savages who lived in the dirt and like just lived in huts. And I was like, wait a second. Yes, you know, some people live in huts. A lot of people live in huts. But first, there's nothing wrong with huts. And second, there was like a lot more than that. So like, for instance, in the book, the capital city is called Himyra. And there are these walls that surround Himyra. And that's actually based on the ancient city of Benin in what is now Nigeria. Benin once had walls that were four times the ones of the Great Wall of China. Benin's walls could wrap around the United Kingdom, the entire island, like 16 times, you know, and the ruins of it are still there. But most people do not recognize that we had that. Or like another like fact about Benin is like they had streetlights. They had a streetlight system, one of the earliest streetlight systems in the world. This was like in the 14th century, like before Europe was even thinking of that. So it's like, it was all of these things, like when I was looking at all these different cultures and nations and things that I did not see represented in the history that I'd learned here. I was like, no, we have to go and we have to put stuff like that in the book so that, you know, people can go back and like learn about all these cultures that I did, that I was quite frankly very fascinated by and like geeked out a lot on.
Yeah, no, I think it's important and that you are saying this because now people really can be like, oh, okay, so some of this is true. Now, there's also love in the book, you know, love between women in terms of friendship. Do you have a best friend in your life? And if so, when did that person become your best friend and how long have you been friends?
It is funny because, like, I have like five really good friends, but like my best friend Shamira Butts, shout out to you, Shamira. we met in high school. We met in ninth grade. I was very, very geeky and awkward, and I didn't really talk. And Shamira basically came and pulled me out of my shell because she saw me like reading. And she was like, hi, I want to be friends. And I was like, who are you and why are you talking to me? And we've been friends ever since.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, you just talked about you like reading. I read somewhere you used to read like 8 books a week. What, I mean, how many books do you read now? Because now you're not New York Times bestselling. Do you even have time to read books?
I don't read like that anymore because like now I'm writing. But what I do still do is every morning I wake up and I will read articles for about an hour. So, like, I will scour the web and read everything, like, from The Atlantic to BuzzFeed. And, like, that's just sort of, like, my morning mental practice to get myself in the game. And then my annoying habit is I'll send all my friends articles that I think I'm like, oh, I read this. I think this is fascinating. And it sounds like something you'd enjoy. Here, an article. Good morning to
right,
you.
Right, right.
Yes. So I still do that. And then, okay, I have to confess, when I'm working, I read a ton of romance novels. So I won't tell you what they are because these are, like, my things. But, like, I that's the way that I'm like, oh, this isn't writing work. This is just, it has nothing to do with what I write. Therefore, I can enjoy it. So I read a ton of romance novels. And, like, that's how I keep, like, my brain
no,
separate.
No, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Now, I love the cover of the book. It's a beautiful cover, and it was done by Johnny Karajosu. Am I pronouncing his name correctly?
Yes, he is a phenomenal artist, and he just did such an amazing job.
How did you connect with him? Was it from the publisher, or did you know somebody who knew him, or how did you connect with Johnny?
Oh, it was the publisher that did it, because, like, I honestly – I had nothing to do with this with the cover. I originally wanted something that was very dark and ominous, because here is a book about like a group of girls who are kicking butt, they're taking names, they are fighting the patriarchy, you know, so I was like, it's going to be grim. And then my editor was like, simmer down, Amina. I know an artist that is amazing, and I think they have what you are looking for. And she showed me pictures that he'd done, and I was like, I'm not sure. She's like, be quiet, Amina. Let him do his work. And so he did the cover, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh, my God. Because, like, one thing that I'd forgotten was that with all this, you know, the grimness and, like, fighting and all this, was, like, how young the girls in my book are. You know, these are 15, 16-year-olds going off to battle for their lives because and to, like, basically live in a world that doesn't accept them and doesn't want them. And when I saw this image, I was like, oh, there's Deka. Look at her. She's a child, and she is vulnerable. And there it was. So that's I love that cover.
Do you think white girls are going to read this book because the cover is a black girl?
Oh,
you think their parents or somebody is going to read it?
Like, they read it and they love it, and then they send me Instagram messages. Like, the other day I got a thing from this girl in Denmark, and she was like, I love it so much. And I was just like, oh, my gosh. But, yeah, no, a lot of white girls love it, because that's the thing is, like, my world is very multiracial. My world is the book assumes that West Africa conquered the world instead of Europe. And so even in the beginning, Deka comes from a place that's basically like England, and then goes down to the middle of West Africa. And that's sort of journey from, So there's all, like, basically I try to make sure in my books that different races, ethnicities, sexualities, and abilities are always sort of included. Because I remember growing up, and never having a book where somebody looked like me, sounded like me. And even if there was a black person, it was always like the sidekick who was comic relief or died at the end or died first.
Mm-hmm. Died first. I was about to say, died at the end?
Yeah, yeah. Now, I wanted to make sure.
Oh, go ahead. You wanted to make sure?
Oh, yeah. So I wanted to make sure when I was writing that I was opening out my arms and including most people as much as I could, because I knew what it was like to be on the other side, just being like, somebody represent me, please. I love books. I want to be in, too.
Now, it's interesting because, you know, that she's supposed to be a monster, but at the cover, she looks so beautiful. And it's like perception of what is beauty, you know, if you think about that, like in terms of African-Americans, our skin colors, our variations, and our body shapes, and we come in all different shapes. Like, we're not monolith, you know what I mean, people. But in general, on the news, you have this image of, like, the welfare mom, or, you know, the fear of the black man trying to, you know, rape or steal something, a very negative, dark image. I mean, just on so many things that are happening now. How do you think this will help for the future? Like, the future, the generation that's reading it now, what do you think they will do next? Or will they forget this as, like, oh, I read that when I was in high school? Or do you think it will take it to heart?
Will take to heart. Like,
take the message, that they're beautiful, that they're beautiful, that they're strong, that it's okay maybe if they're bisexual or gay, that, you know, they're tall or short, that you said they have different abilities, which they do, and also that they're resilient, because many of them went through trauma, you know.
And that's the thing that the book deals with, is trauma, and sort of like it's like just the nitty gritty of it. But like one of the things that I encountered when I was writing this book was every time I wanted to write what is a beautiful woman, immediately in my head, I thought a blonde woman, with like blue eyes. And so what I then did, because I realized, oh, that's internalized racism. the most beautiful woman, the woman who is the most beautiful woman in the book is like a dark-skinned queer woman with short hair, you know? And then
you were thinking that at your age,
yes,
you were still thinking that the blonde was
But that's how, you know, that's how internalized oppression works. It's like these things are so deep. We've been seeing it all our lives. Every time, like I used to work at a place where I had to go through the mall. I would park at the mall here in LA, and I'd have to go through it to get to work. And every day that I'd go through it, this was in like what 2013. Every picture that was on the walls was like a white woman, typically blonde, like, you know, like pouting her lips seductively. And the mall I'm talking about is the Grove here in LA, right? And so it was awful because every time I'd go and I'd walk around, I'd be like, there's nobody who looks like me. Maybe I'm ugly, you know? Because this is what people find attractive. Now, the other day I went to the Grove again and to my Shaw, like all the advertisements now had had people of different races, ethnicities, colors on these advertisements. And like when I looked at that, I was like, wow, the world has actually changed. And I feel better for like the people who are growing up now because they don't have to grow up in the world that I grew up in where all that was beauty was a real thin blonde woman. Like now there's the allowance for different types of beauty. But I try in my book to reinforce that, you know, beauty is different kinds of things. It's different types of things, and it can be you, and it is you. You know, like in my book, like I try to, the message of my book is that only you get to decide who you are. You know, like people always have things that they want to tell you about who you are. And oftentimes when they're trying to tell you stuff like about who you are, it's like it's usually not the best thing. And so in this book,
it's their issue. You know what I mean?
It's their issue that they're projecting onto you.
Exactly. Yeah. They're projecting onto you. You know, one of the things I like in the book, you talk, the characters, I'm giving a little bit away, but they're talking about their virginity. And they talk both boys and girls. And they talk about how it's okay if you're a virgin. You know, because, again, talking back to that male persona of, you know, how many women you slept with and, you know, things of that nature. And if you haven't, then you're not cool. I was really happy to see that you didn't just focus on the girl's virginity, but you also brought out the fact that, you know, guys are virgins, or sometimes they're not, but it's okay. And as long as I think they're not forced into the sexual situation, then it's okay. You know what I mean? And I really appreciated that because as a social worker, I had a period where I was dealing with a lot of young guys, and there was, you know, all types of young guys that were like the macho dudes. I mean, they're under 18, but they were macho. And then you had the quiet ones. There was ones that I knew were either gay or bisexual, or they did not fit into the regular, you know, machismo lane. And it was, you know, trying to get them to accept themselves. And then, you know, like the groups would gang up on each other. So I'm really happy you had that aspect in there. But now let's get back to this issue, the trauma thing. You know, a lot of young women are sexually abused, and they don't have anybody to talk to about it, and they don't know that anybody else is going through it.
So that was, like, the book, like, so in The Gilded Ones, there are no actual depictions of rape or sexual violence. And I did that very carefully, like we talk about it, but I did that very carefully because I did not want to re-traumatize anyone. So where I grew up, like Sierra Leone has very high rates of sexual trauma. You know, like the sad fact is that most women in my country are introduced to sex through basically molestation. you know. Mm-hmm. But not only that, like I come, like Sarah Leo, 90% of the women have gone through FGM, female genital mutilation, and this is like, and people will tell it to you and be like, oh, you know, this is what you need to be pure. This is what you need to be a woman. And so, like,
yeah.
if all the girls are taught that, automatically they're taught that their bodies are not their own and that they need to do these things to satisfy everyone around them. And then when I came to America, because that's the thing, it's like, here it's always like, oh, there's a problem over there. You know, it's always there's a problem in those African countries, those Middle Eastern countries, those whatever.
No, but people
never
do it here as well.
Here. Yeah.
People do it here, like, people do it in Europe, people do it in Asia. It's all over. As a matter of fact, I remember there was a whole argument in France where they were trying to appease certain Muslim acts of the FGM, and they were like, oh, well, we could make it a law that it's okay to take a nick. And I was like, what?
Yeah, no,
what
but
does
also
that mean?
Is the country that still doesn't, like, is still grappling with what is actually the age of sexual consent, and was basically okay with, like, grown men, you know, being with little girls. Like, I don't know if you read, there was, like, a huge furor in France where this, anyway, sorry, that's aside from the thing. But, like, I'm just, like, I'm always, like, France, really? Squint my eye.
So what are you coming up with next? Is this going to be part of a series, or is this the end and then you're coming up with something different?
So The Gilded Ones is a trilogy. Book two comes out next year in May. And book three comes out the year after that. And then after that, I have other books coming down the pipeline. So, you know, yeah.
When do you sleep then? I mean, you're talking about you wake up in the morning, you read the articles, you send them to your friends, you read your romance novels, and then you start writing for the rest of the day. What's your, like, day look like?
Okay, so I typically sleep very early. That's the secret. Like, usually by 9 o'clock, I am out like a light.
Okay.
And I wake, if I'm on deadline, I'll wake anywhere from 2 to 4 a.m. to get my work done. Because, like, I'm an early morning writer. I really like it. Like, I really like sort of the silence of early morning because nobody ever bothers you. Nobody's, like, emailing you. Nobody's texting you. So, like, if I'm in, like, a really good sort of situation, like a really good sort of routine, I'm waking up super early, writing and doing the bulk of my work before 10 a.m.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, a lot of, like, millionaires, billionaires, that's one of the secrets. They get up really early. They have a routine. They do the little meditation. They exercise. They do the same thing you're talking about, check your emails, bada bing, bada boom. And they've done, like, more in the first, like, 6 to 10 a.m. than the rest of us do from 9 to 5. So that sounds like a good plan. Let me ask you this. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
Oh, okay. This is the one that I love because I would definitely like to get the powers of Dr. Strange. I'm like, I would like to be able to visit different places and have the ability to survive in them. And by different places, I mean different planets, dimensions, all that. Like, I would love the power to just travel, see everything, and be able to survive.
Real quick, what if you had $100, what would you do with it?
If I had $100, right now I would invest. That's what I do.
You would invest,
you know? I would invest.
When you leave the,
yes,
when you leave the house, what has to be in your purse or backpack or pocketbook? What can't you leave the house without?
My cell phone. It's my cell phone is my wallet. It has everything. Like, I feel like it's
okay
for everybody. But I will also say my dog, because I take my dog everywhere. Literally, we went to the nail salon yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I'm one of those people. I've turned into, like,
huh?
Yeah, I take her to restaurants.
You take it?
We go to,
Go ahead. You go where?
Yeah, no, we go to restaurants. We go to the beach. We go every, like, this is L.A., thankfully. So, like, people with, like, little dogs in their purses are not a strange sight. And my little dog is with me. And people love her because she's very bouncy, bouncy, bouncy.
Okay. What kind of dog is she?
Oh, I call her a multi-poo-poo because her name is Magnificent, by the way, as in the Boondocks. And she is a multi-poo-poo in that, like, her mom's a multi-poo and her dad's like a poodle. So she has a lot of good poodle. So she's a multi-poo-poo.
And Sara Leone, what's your favorite food dish that you like?
Oh, my God. You can't ask me this question. This is an illegal question because all the food
top
in Sierra
three?
Leone is good.
Can we say top three?
Oh.
Top three, maybe?
All right, so top three, I'm going to go with roast beef, cassata leaf, and jollof rice. And I will also plug my country and say we have some of the best food in West Africa, and we have some of the nicest beaches in West Africa. What am I talking about? So people really should visit because it's a really nice place. Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Namina, for coming on the show today. I really love the book. Like I said, I could not put it down. I was so happy when the ending part turned the way I thought it was because I knew it. I can't say what that is because I don't want to give it away. But thank you again. I really can't wait to read the rest of the trilogy. And thank you for coming, and I hope you have a great weekend.
And thank you so much for having me, and have an amazing weekend as well.
I'm so sorry about the little technical thing that happens, life, but we reconnected, and I'll be able to edit out that little small part there. So no worries, okay?
All right. Thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate it. You made my morning like fun. All right.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with New York Times bestselling author, Namina Forna. You want to check out her book, The Gilded Ones. Could not put this book down. I'm going to give away some copies of her book. So you want to follow me on Twitter, @JoyKeys. Check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Also, you can check the show out on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google, as well as here at Blog Talk Radio. You can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Anytime, 24 hours, it's one of those, like a storefront that's open 24 hours. I may not reply to you at 2 o'clock in the morning, but I will get back to you eventually. Thank you again for supporting the show. You can check us out on PayPal, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Make a donation to help the show keep going. All right, I hope you guys have a great weekend, and I will talk to you soon.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, GOAT, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner. They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.